Silva, you absolutely suck.
Just going for the cup of tea. Welcome along to Obviously Fight Talk episode 49. Brought to you as always by Fight Star Ireland, the fighter's choice. Be it groin guards, shin pads, boxing gloves,
testicle guards,
testicle holders. They're all under one roof. Check them out and tell them the lads from Obviously Fight Talk sent you. Also to MMAMix.com for all your MMA needs. They're obviously good.
Because they would obviously fight.
And he done it about time. I am joined, as always, never misses a show, the beautiful...
One job, Rob.
Hashtag one job, Rob. Robert Pallant.
How's it going, man?
My show rundown this week, we will be joined by some nice ones. We won't give them all away now, but your rundown will be your obviously fight talk quickfire news even. We will then hopefully have Referee's Corner with Daniel Mulvihedy. We'll then have an interview with Paul Berdew Craig. We'll also be joined by Bellator's color commentator Jimmy Smith, and we're also going to speak a little bit about UFC Fight Night Rodriguez versus Penn. So let's get into it straight away. So welcome back to Obviously Fight Talk, and I'm delighted to say we are now joined by the perfect record 9-0, the former Bama light heavyweight champion, now UFC fighter fighting at UFC 209. Welcome to Obviously Fight Talk, Paul Berdew Craig.
It's a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're very well, my man. Absolutely delighted as well to get you on. You're somebody, you may not remember this, but when you fought in Bama in Dublin, I was the MC who actually introduced you that night, so...
I remember it very well.
Yeah, screaming in your face. Normally when I get to the fighter, I say the presenting, and then I start roaring the name, and not too many times I get intimidated, but fuck me, I was intimidated. You're a big bastard.
I'm a lover, man.
That night you fought Carl Moore, if memory serves me right, and you got the win in the second round. So, Paul, I'm gonna. Sometimes I do this when we have guests on. I want to almost go backwards before we get to where you are now. So, just as a young man growing up in Scotland, what was your first exposure to MMA or combat sports? A lot of people say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that type of thing. But what was your first exposure?
Yeah, I'm an 80s kid, so the Ninja Mutant Turtles were the dogs Bill Eriks back then. But my first sort of introduction to any sort of martial arts was guys like Bruce Lee. You know, growing up watching these guys, thinking, you're badass. Guys like Jet Li, who doesn't like a wee bit of Van Damme, you know. Steven Seagal, until you get a bit older and you realise he's a bit of a fraud, you know, all this sort of fucking hand movement. There's guys jumping all over the spot. But that was my first introduction to martial arts, and I always wanted to do it, but my parents never ever sent me into that. You know, I grew up in the west of Scotland where it's football, football, football. So the option I had was football. So I played football, I enjoyed my time playing football, went from playing football to coaching football, and then stopped playing football, started lifting weights, and then for lifting weights, I then got into doing mixed. Didn't even know what the UFC was. And I got introduced to this, my friend brought me down, and he... it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen, you know, when you're taking a guy's arm and you're going to snap it and you see the panic in his face. Perfect, man. It's a nice feeling. So I found I was very good at that. And then boxing, I started doing a bit of boxing with my coach, Lawrence Murphy. And then I just fired the two of them together. Went in and had my first amateur fight against a prospect down in Sunderland. I think the guy was called Gary Civils. And from that, I ended up tapping him in the first round. I remember this very well. I had a group of guys outside wanting to knock lumps out of me because I beat Gary Civils. I found this hilarious, and the promoter comes in and he says, "You can't leave." And I said, "How not?" And he went, "Because his pals are all waiting outside to knock your pie in." And I said, "Well, surely they've seen me knock his pie in and not be waiting there." So it just kind of spiralled out of control. You know, I was an amateur. I had an unbeaten record there, about 8-0, and then I went pro. And the same sort of thing, I just started racking up wins. I was getting wasn't getting a lot of love because the guys I was fighting, they were deemed as not being as good as what was out there. And I was picking all the hard fights, you know, we were fighting for the top 10, but when it came to fight time, the fights all cancelled. And I ended up fighting just some guy to treat, which is pretty dangerous trying to make a career in MMA. And then from...
Just losing it there a little bit.
What we do is we just lost Paul there, so what we do is we'll end the call, we just call him back there, so you'll get some lovely bloop, and we'll be back.
Oh. Right, cool. We're back.
Yeah, we're back. You're saying we just lost the connection a little bit. So sorry, you were just saying you took the top 10 guy, the people were saying you weren't fighting at a caliber there, and we lost you then.
Yeah, so the first test we had was Bama, and we were giving Carol Moore. Yeah. Now, I remember saying at the time in one interview, I said, all I need is to let people hear me talk. And like, everything I'm doing in the cage, I can back up my talk. I mean, I'm not an aggressive guy that says, I'm going to smash you. I'm like, I know what I can do with my abilities. And I was right. I beat Carol Moore, took a zero. And there's people been saying to me, wait till Carol Moore gets to the UFC. He's coming for you and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I'm Carol Moore's only loss. Why would Carol Moore risk not getting to the... Why would Carol Moore come into the UFC and risk getting bombed out to try to pick a fight with me? So then I went through Carol Moore to Martin Lazars, who beat Brett McDermott for the Bama Elite Heavyweight Champion. And then I went and I beat him in quite a convincingly fashion, you know. I took him out in the first round, a guy who was dangerous. He was a grappler. He was strong in the clinch, and I beat him. And I beat him at stand-up as well. And then from that, we were meant to fight Chris Fields. Unfortunately, that never happened. That was going to be a great fight. You know, we had that wee bit of backlash behind the stages at Bama, and it was going to be a good fight, man. It was still going my way. And we couldn't agree a deal, myself and Bama, for what was after my contract had ended. The UFC came in and snapped me up within days of my contract being over.
And was that something that when the fight fell through with Fields, do you remember when the UFC contacted you? Was do you know where you were and talk to the position? Because we always hear of fighters getting signed. Is it the likes of Sean Shelby or Joe Silva contacting you, or does it go through the manager? Or what's the process there?
It was through my coach Brian Gallagher. It was through him. He got the phone call, and I was pottering about. I'd sort of written off 2016 as that's it over. I'm not going to fight because I didn't fight. Last November was the last time I'd fought. So it was a whole year I was out. And the UFC, I was like, there's no chance they're going to put me in an American card. I was like, right, we made a push for the Belfast card and it never pulled off. And I was like, I was quite disappointed. And I was a bit down because I wanted it then and I was ready for it. And then all of a sudden I get a phone call to my coach at like 11:30 at night saying, what are you doing the 17th of December? And I was like, are you thinking of UFC? And he's like, yeah. And that was it. And then within about hours, they'd filed over all this paperwork. And I'm talking like hours. And it was everything. And it was a bit intense. And I went through it all. And that was us. We were signed to the UFC. We are a dangerous opponent again. Another unbeaten fighter. 2 wins in the UFC. 12-0 as a pro fighter. So, and yet again, we beat him in the second round. It's like some sort of fairy tale. I'm wondering, man. I'm just waiting to be woken up.
Something you always hear as well, Paul, is the UFC jitters. This is something that they always talk about. Rogan always says it in commentary. You know, there's a difference with coming in, like you were going in as an undefeated fighter, but stepping into that UFC octagon is just a whole new level. So, is the UFC jitters such a thing? Did it exist for you stepping in there?
Not for me. You know, I try to soak up as much of that as possible. You know, the whole experience of walking out, the whole experience of dealing with people, dealing with the guys in the back, dealing with the California State Boxing Commission. I try to soak up as much of that as possible because I'm in this journey for memories. Like, money comes and goes, but memories stay with you until you die, man, and that's what I'm looking for. And I remember walking out, and they've got this big banner around the Capital One or Central One Stadium, and it was saying Paul Bear Drew Craig, and I was thinking this is like badass. And then there's this wee picture of me up on the screen, and I'm like, that was pretty cool. minute I get in the cage, do my wee sitting at my wee ritual where I run around the cage, I was ready to go. I was ready to slow down, man. Didn't feel out my depth, felt natural, felt like this is what I was putting myself to do. Kick dick.
With regards to getting to the UFC as well, do you feel like Bama, obviously, you know, we've other promotions as well, but Bama recently have had a flood of fighters between Mark DeCasey, yourself, Mark Godbeer, who we hope to have on the show soon. getting the call. Do you feel like Bama is the perfect platform as a European show for this step?
Definitely. You know, I had to test myself because people were saying he's never been tested and Bama's the perfect place to do that. And what I said in one of my interviews is I think if you find that some of the toughest opponents you're going to come across are in these shows, not in the UFC, in places like Cage Warriors, Bama, EFC, ACB, all these shows have got guys who have wanted to get to this next level, this dream, and they're fighting for it and they're fighting a lot harder than guys who are in the UFC. That's just my opinion. And that's the way I'm looking at it. But I think you can find some of the toughest opponents are in these promotions.
Do you think a couple of years ago we looked at the kind of American wrestlers, the guys coming up through the American scene and the guys coming up through the Brazilian scene? But it seems like in the past couple of years, like you said, some of the best guys that are in the UFC right now have come up through the European scene. Do you see the growth in the Europe scene?
I see a massive growth within the UK and European scene of MMA. When I first started this sport, you know, There wasn't a lot of European guys in UFC. There wasn't a lot of UK guys in the UFC. And there was no Scottish guys. So now you're looking at it and we're stacked heavy with European, Scottish and the UK guys. Ireland was the first to bridge the way. You know, Conor McGregor, and then he brought in all his pals, man. They just smothered the place and that opened up doors for small nations like yourself, which is a good thing.
You can see that as well now with the Welsh fighters as well coming in. It's almost, you know, the doors are being kicked down, and once it's almost like the younger stars coming up as well. The path is there. They can see it. It's something that's definitely possible. But we spoke about this previously on the show as well. The caliber of European MMA has literally gone through the roof. It used to be like every time, like I even remember just as far back as Dan Hardy, and that wasn't that long ago, that Joe Rogan would always go, "Ah, yeah, but the wrestling." Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I got to the stage where, sure, they'll just take them down and beat them up. They're European. But then you see guys like yourself winning with submissions, pulling submissions out of somewhere. Now, I do have to mention, we did have the Housewife Choice Chris Fields on last week. Two weeks ago. He did say, you know, hopefully down the patches we'll meet, just because he thinks, like you said, it'd be a good fight. He almost pulled a George St. Pierre and said he wasn't impressed with your performance. But he did say it was a superb submission that you won, boy.
You know, my UFC performance, you know, performance of the night, everybody thought that this guy was just going to walk over the top of me. He was going to beat me in the stand-up, and he was a dangerous grappler as well. And you know what? For him to say that he wasn't impressed with it, man, I showed some cracking stand-up. That guy's face looked like it was Frankenstein's. His face was bust open, and I showed takedowns, and I won with an impressive submission. Not only that, see when he got to your wrestling, man, Brian Stan was slating me for my wrestling. This guy's not a wrestler. This guy's not a wrestler. I was like, oh, shit. So I got my Foxcatcher t-shirt on, my John DePont t-shirt, and I said to my Pete, saying, this t-shirt says, I can wrestle like fuck.
Is that something that, obviously you've watched the fight back, but when you're cage side, you know, when you're over near the commentators, you'd always hear, I tend to do it as well on some shows that I'm involved in that on, but you always hear Rogan going, yeah, and they're right in front of me. Can you actually hear them and sort of hear what they're doing?
I could hear everything they were saying. And when I had the guillotine in the first round, I could hear Brian Stan saying, oh, it's tied, he needs to scoot his hips. So he was coaching me for the side. I was like, Brian, I'm trying, I just can't get it, brother. But no, you can hear every word, and you can, you know, all you can hear is a wee dying Scottish guy in my corner, my coach, man. When I watch that back, all I hear is him, jab, cross. You can hear every word they say, so that's a good corner to have in.
Talk about the finish, because a lot of people were surprised that you pulled guard, and it obviously paid dividends because you got the submission. But is that something that you train? Is that something in training that you actually do, or was it just a sport of the moment thing? Did you feel comfortable?
Well, the finish was set up where we come in, and I cracked him some good shots standing up. You know, I had put in that guillotine. We'd stood back up. I had a good stiff jab. Had fired in some kicks, some body kicks. And when I'm in my corner, Brian, my coach, said to me, he said, "Paul, this guy's called Frankenstein because he allows people to punch the living daylights out of him and then the gas, and then he'll attack them. And that's how he's won fights. He's done it 12 times. That's how he's won his 12 fights." So I had that in the back of my head. So when I had him up against the cage and I was landing some heavy shots, and I seen this opportunity, and I was like, he's gassed. He's not going to be able to hold me on the deck. So when I pulled him in, and then he stood up, I was like, why is he doing this? And then he tried to do this really shitty pass and fling an overhand right at the same time. And the triangle was there, so I fired in the triangle. He adjusted his hips, so it was the armbar that was there. And I get criticised for somebody on like a forum was telling me, well, you never cross your legs when you're doing an armbar. And I was like, fuck up, did you do that submission in the UFC?
He probably did, but it was on UFC EA Sports, so you know what I mean?
It's true, but you know, my legs were crossed because I'm then transitioning to get the triangle again. So if I just went for that armbar and I'd lost it, then I'd lost everything I'd worked for. So you've always got to be a few moves ahead, and that's where it came from. It wasn't a fact that, because somebody asked me, oh, were you hurt? Well, I wasn't. I'd taken these shots. You know, I sparred with Mark Godbeer, man. Mark Godbeer hasn't a fucking train. So I'm not worried about taking shots. I sparred with pro boxers who hit hard as well. Actual guys who are whole game plan is to punch the face off you. So I'm not worried about taking shots. I just didn't want to gas and look like an absolute dick and get done in the fucking second round by gassing. So I pulled him in top of me and the rest is history.
Your opponent coming up now, Tyson Pedro, he's 5-0 and he has 4 wins by submission. So again, is this something, you know, I know the competition, you know, you've plenty of wins by submission as well. Is that something you're looking forward to, is testing yourself on the ground, or what do you know? Obviously, game plans are going to be kept in camp, but first impressions, what's your outlook on this fight and what do you know of Tyson?
Well, I never watch my opponents just because if you've waited for one thing to happen in the fight and it might never come, then you've trained for something that it's never going to happen. So I don't train for a specific moment. What I train for is an actual all-round fight. I train to improve, right? Brian Stan was slagging my wrestling, so I'm going to improve my wrestling. I'm always training boxing and always training jiu-jitsu. They're my, like, I enjoy them and I'm in training them every single day. For what I know about him, give me a second, just this door's open.
Yep, no worries.
For what I know about him, through what my coach has said, he's told me that he used to be an amateur boxer. Now, you get boxers and you get boxers. I'm training with pro boxers. I spar with pro boxers and I can hold my own. So I'm happy to stand up and crack to him. On the deck, you know, I feel like my submission for MMA is, it works well. I've got this nice balance. And if he takes me to the ground, I think he's going to get subbed. I don't see it going anywhere else. So I'm happy. If it stays standing, I'll knock him out. I've got power in my hands, and I've seen he's been put down a few times. He's been put in his arse a few times, so I'm happy to do that again for him.
Yeah. But following your last fight in the post-fight scrum, you did mention that you wanted somebody in the top 15. You obviously didn't get it. Was that because, did you accept this fight because it's the only one that was available, or are you a little bit disappointed you didn't get somebody in the top 15, or what happened there?
Well, we had, we're obviously, Mark Godbeer's up here doing his training camp, and he said, listen, I want to come up and train with you and the guys at the Scottish Hit Squad for my fight camp. He's fighting 209. So we seen it as a great opportunity to say, you know, we'll ask for this card, and we'll ask for the card in Vegas because I've got the Friday and the Saturday. So we'd messaged the matchmaker and said, can we get a fight in Vegas? Now, they told us both cards were fully booked, and then a few days later, come back with this opponent. Now, he wasn't what I wanted, because I was upset that I wanted this top 15 opponent. I wanted somebody of worth. And I'm not saying that Tyson Pedro isn't of worth. What I'm saying is I was trying to make some progress through the top ranking guys. But when the UFC come and ask you, when you've asked for a show and the UFC come with a fighter, you can't really knock it back. And that's why I took this fight. And I'm glad I took it. You know, it's a big card. We've had a few fights released, say, like Wonderboy Thompson, And we've got Alistair O'Brien against Mark Hunt. So it's going to be a big, big card for me, and especially for Mark.
And that's something, again, when you have the big superstars on the card as well, as in the fights, I know Hunt and Overeem is confirmed. Wonderboy and Woodley isn't yet confirmed, although Wonderboy has. Yeah, he's tweeted a picture of the contract saying, just waiting on you, Woodley.
Khabib said he's in camp for 209.
Yeah, Khabib's in camp. And this is the sort of thing that, it's when these lads, when you go in there, if you put on a show, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the world is watching in that sense. And like in the 205 division, a couple of wins, and all of a sudden, you know what I mean, you're on the tip of everyone's tongue, and you're pushing there. Is that something, again, that, looking at the division, how do you think you stand with the top five guys? Obviously, being a fighter, you're going to say, yeah, that's the realistic. But 2017, what's realistic for Paul Craig?
2017, I said that I would take this fight as a top 15 opponent. So that's me set back. But I'm hoping they're coming to Glasgow. We've heard rumours of summertime in Glasgow. So I'm hoping then, I'm hoping I get a good opponent. I'm hoping I headline, beat him, regardless of who it is. And then I'm just going to keep progressing. You know, I want five fights by the end of this year. I would love to be fighting for the belt by the end of the year. We know this division isn't stacked. We know there's no... The guys on their way out, guys have all fought each other. You know, they're needing some new blood within this, and I think I'm the guy to do it. You know, I'm 9-0. I know for a fact I'm going to be 10-0. And I'll be able to hang with these guys. There's nobody in the UFC that's not beatable, apart from Demetrius Johnson. He's like a freak.
I'd say a catchweight belt, my money's on you.
he weighs like one of my arms. But no man is unbeatable. No man in there. If you train hard enough and you've got the belief, man, anything can happen. You know, it's the UFC. We've seen guys lose their belt. We've seen guys like going on a tear up and losing their belt, apart from John Jones, who loses his own belt. But we've seen guys go and we've been like, he's the ultimate, and then he get done in. So anything can happen.
And that's somebody you're mentioning, John Jones, there. It brings me. John Jones is scheduled to come back in July. And again, a lot of people consider, in some way disrespectfully to DC, they still consider John Jones the real light heavyweight champion. Again, he's obviously the pinnacle of your weight class, of the sport. A lot consider him the pound for pound. Is that a fight that, down the line, that's the dream fight?
Yep. My coach said, we were talking about going over to America and doing a fight camp. Just hypothetically, because we've got everything all under one roof in Scotland here. And I said, where would you like to go? And I said, what about like Jackson's? And he said, nah. And I said, how about, you get some really good guys there, you know, they're all savages. And he said, why would I want you to fight a guy, to train with a guy you're going to beat? And I love that attitude of my coach, man. We're not the finished product. We are a year away from the finished product to be fighting for that belt. And I know we're a year away for that, but every day a little better, every day a little tougher, every day a little bit uglier. So I'm looking forward to what this year can bring for me. And I believe John Jones, if he's back in the mix, then that'd be a great fight for me, you know.
Again, you won over some Irish hearts when you walked out Obama wearing the Dublin jersey.
Yeah.
But you almost rescinded that love that we had for you when you called out and had the arguments with Chris Fields. I grew up with Chris Fields. I know him. He's from the same neighbourhood as me. But, you know, I think respect, that fight was more respect with the two. You guys are selling a fight. Everybody understands that. And it was great crack to see it as well. We're big fans of you here on the show. We're going to wish you the best of luck on it. Come back on when you get your W. You're welcome back, and obviously Fight Talk anytime. Thanks for taking the time to come on with us. Get out and tell Godbeard to get on his messenger and answer us back.
I will do, guys. Listen, thank you for your time, and cheers for the love, and I'll know disappoint Scotland and the UK and Ireland.
Cheers. And listen, best of luck, and thanks again for taking the time. And
thanks, guys.
Me, man. Take care.
Cheers.
So now we're back with obviously Fight Talk, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by the voice, the play-by-play man, Jimmy Smith from Bellator. So Jimmy, thanks for taking the time to join us here in obviously Fight Talk, and welcome to the show for the first time.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm going to start off where, let's be honest, Bellator were just here, so let's speak about Bellator Ireland. What was your first, your opinions of the Dublin crowd? It was a pretty hyped crowd and a pretty good show here for Bellator.
They were awesome. And they were absolutely great. I mean, that was, to me, the high point of the card was the crowd. I mean, the fights were good, everything was great, but man, that crowd is amazing. You guys are passionate about your guys, and that showed every single fight.
Yeah, it's one thing we do here in Ireland. We like drinking beer and we cheer on our we cheer on our athletes. On the night, we obviously have a couple of names that we throw at you from the Irish perspective, but from the fighters on the card, who stood out for you on the card?
I think Gallagher stood out for me. I mean, not only just the reaction he got from everybody, but you know, I look for a guy with his experience level to kind of let the moment get to him a little bit. That you know, the pressure of being at home, having all these expectations on him, might get to him, and it doesn't. I mean, he fights very well under that kind of stress. So that's what I was looking for. I think he performed very well.
Do you almost think that because he doesn't get the first round finish all the time, and there's so much hype on him that people forget how young he is, forget how much he can progress in the sport, and they say, oh, he didn't get the finish, he didn't beat him in the first round. Do you think it's kind of unfair on a young guy like that?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the collision in MMA that you have to understand is talent and popularity.
Yeah.
How good are you and how popular are you? A good guy isn't always popular, a popular guy isn't always good. And so when they come together and a popular guy is really great, it's really something special. That's what we all live for in the fight world. And with Gallagher, it's one of those things you got to remember, he's just a kid, he's coming up, but he's extremely popular and has a huge fan base. So one kind of has to catch up to the other. And right now, he's really popular. He needs time to become great as a fighter. And so those two things are not going to progress at the same rate because he's already popular.
Okay, like we obviously, I myself over here, you should have seen me on the Bellator card, I should have been doing it. But I myself here, I'm an announcer here, I'm a ring announcer here in Ireland. So I've announced James from an amateur up to his professional debut as well. So we're very familiar here with James, and that popularity from his amateur days was just as strong. He's had that big amateur following here as well, and there was always the big hype. And the one thing that a lot of people tend to do here, be it almost through laziness, they always compare him to Conor McGregor. They'd say he's the next Conor McGregor. And anytime we've had James on the show here with us, he came in with another fighter from SBG, Keane Cowley. They sat in with us, and James was like, I'm not the next Conor McGregor, I'm the next James Gallagher. But again, like, it's almost like he's trying to get out of that shadow, but it's not a bad comparison. But at the same time, it's a little bit lazy, but it's not a bad comparison.
I mean, it's a pretty good shadow to be under. I mean, if you're going to be compared to somebody, that's a great one. But the thing that we're discussing that makes him different is before anyone had ever heard of Conor McGregor in the States or outside of Ireland, he had 15 fights. Mm. You know, I mean, he was very, very experienced before he went into the UFC. So he had faced a big range of opponents and all these things that Gallagher, because of Conor McGregor, the eyes of the MMA world a lot of times are on Ireland. He's not going to get that slow build. He's not going to get that chance to build up 15 or 20 fights from people. People are already saying, well, he hasn't fought anybody great. He hasn't fought so-and-so and this guy and this guy. And I'm like, you know, he's, what, four fights in? You know, it's going to take time to do that. But the problem is you can't – as soon as you're popular, that focus is going to be on you. And it doesn't always give you time to develop. That's the tough part of being popular early on in your career.
One thing I'd say as well, when we interviewed James after the fight, he was saying about Anthony Taylor, he's like, I've never seen anybody strike like that or come forward like that. He says, like, he basically said he trains with world-class strikers, and this guy looked like he belonged outside of a chipper after hours, you know, and he said, like, I've never seen it, so it took me a while to adjust to it. So is that something, as you were calling the fight, that you maybe took into consideration as well, that Taylor was wild?
Yeah, well, he was wild, and he's strong, and he's physical, and athletic, and explosive, and he's funky with his style and his angles, and he would engage and disengage at weird times, and it takes a while to get a read on a guy like that. And it's also somebody who was, at the time, 1-1. Not a lot of tape on the guy. There's not a lot to study. You don't know exactly what you're walking into, so you got to take all those things into consideration. And he took his time to figure Taylor out before he was able to finish him.
One other big standout, again, we're being selfish, but from the Irish side of things was...
And I have no idea what a chipper is, by the way.
Oh, a chipper is like, you know, like where you get fish and chips or a...
Gotcha.
Yeah.
A bit of Southern fried chicken, something like that. Or a whirly burger. Try that, Jimmy. That's a real Irish thing, a whirly burger.
I'm sure it is.
It's a burger in batter that has a bun on it. It's... beautiful.
I will have one of those the next time I'm in Ireland.
There you go, a whirly bar. Another notable standout as well on the night, again, us being selfish, being Irish, was Sinead Kavanagh. She's known as Sinead K.O. Kavanagh, and how the K.O. didn't come is just more of a nod to her opponent. it was a very, very dominant three rounds by Sinead in that bout.
Yeah, Kylie O'Neill, though, didn't really seem to know what to do with her. I mean, there was a lot of headlock and clinching and holding, and I think one of the things, when there's expectations on you, like there was with Kavanaugh, a lot of what she did is she kept moving forward when I didn't think it was in her benefit. I think she needed to come back a little bit, get some range on her punches. She kept driving Calanido into the fence and, like, unloading against the fence when she wasn't going to get the knockout. She didn't – her range wasn't great. There were things that you always want to see with a young fighter, things that you can go back to the gym and the coach can go, all right, you won, you were dominant, you got to fix X, Y, and Z. And her range wasn't there. She wasn't at the right range to make her punches really, really effective. And that's why Calanido was able to hang on as long as she was when – she was completely outmatched. I mean, that was a tough fight to watch because Kelly Anido just didn't, you know. In MMA, you're not always going to have the right answer to the question, but you got to answer the question, even if you're wrong. And Kelly Anido didn't seem to have an answer for Kavanaugh at all. And you know, it was just a matter of range that she wasn't able to finish her.
Although it was a mix, it was a Bellator-Bama card. Did you get a chance to watch any of the Bama card?
Yeah, I showed up. I think I saw three of the final Bama fights. I showed up a little early. A friend of mine was calling one of the fights, and so he said, "Yeah, come early and check it out." And I thought they were outstanding. I thought they were really, really great. Love to see some of those guys on a Bellator show.
Yeah, well, that's something that as well, that the card sort of fluctuated, obviously, as most cards do with injuries, and a couple of Bama fights got pushed up to Bellator even, and then. The big shock of the night, I think, on the night was, Cameron Els won't say it was a shock, but the Dillon 2 Cameron Els, the atmosphere when 2 came to the cage was absolutely electric. And as I said, it was like Cameron Els just plugged out the socket and shut the noise down. Like, Dillon 2 is, I have no doubt, and I'd put my landlord's house on it, I have no doubt that Dillon 2 will be an absolute superstar in the future. But that was the fight that really got it was the opening fight for Bellator that evening, and it really got the crowd. The crowd really hit peak, and it just got plugged out. So again, what was your, as much as it was a short fight, it only lasted 20 seconds or so. Again, was that something, again, to experience that real raw Irish, to be unplugged that quick?
It's amazing. I mean the energy these guys have, and also, like, you know what you forget, you know, usually I work in the United States, and there are a lot of options when it comes to not just live sports but mixed martial arts, and you know, in Ireland, I mean, what I heard the most when I was there was, man, we appreciate you guys being here. We don't often get big shows coming here, and, man, it's great to actually be able to go to a live show, and it's a big deal because it doesn't happen that much. Yeah. You know, so it's an appreciative crowd, not just of the fighters but of us as a promotion, and that's awesome. And they show their appreciation by yelling and screaming as much as humanly possible. It was awesome.
Do you know, again, like, because we know when we spoke to Scott Coker after that, he was saying about returning back to Ireland. Do you know, Anthony, is it in the pipeworks there for Bellator to make a return to the Emerald Isle?
Yes, there is.
No exclusive. I like that answer.
Until they come out and to tell you about it. But yes, it's definitely in the works. I mean, you can't not. It was a very successful show. The numbers were here. We're good in the United States, TV-wise, and the crowd was fantastic. Yeah, we're definitely coming back, for sure.
I want to wind you back to something that I used to watch that you were involved in as well, the Fight Quest. Basically, where you travel the world. For anyone who doesn't know what it is, check it out. I'm sure it's available, probably on something else, but you'll get a dodgy version of it on YouTube. It's basically where you travel the world studying different martial arts, and then at the end of each episode, you then sort of competed in the art. But my question to that was, if you remember, I suppose, in that way, what was the most challenging art that you went and studied?
Wow, they were all tough. The hardest one I think I went through physically was in Israel, and we did Krav Maga because a lot of it was, you know, we had 4 or 5 days of training. And so depending on what they had you do, that, I mean, it's like jumping in the middle of camp for 5 days. I mean, there was no warm up. I didn't get a chance to get in shape beforehand. I had to do that at home, and then we had to fly there, and we're doing TV stuff. And before our final fight, and I don't know if it made air. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it. But what they did is they put me with this big dude named Manesh, who was like 230 pounds. And they had us trade leg kicks with each other. And they wouldn't let me check his kicks.
Wow.
So we're just standing there. I'm standing with this giant dude just kicking. He's just kicking me in the thigh. And I'm kicking him back. And And by the end, I couldn't walk. And then I had to fight the next day, and I couldn't walk at all. So that was rough. So it was the things you got put in before the fight that were difficult. It was, you know, sometimes it was like, oh, the day before you fight, I sparred 10 guys in a row or something, which you would never do in real life, you know, getting ready for a fight camp. You know, last week you don't do very much. You don't want to get hurt. So, I mean, we were walking in with really, really serious injuries, especially Doug, a lot of times walking in with injuries that would never pass an inspection in the United States, walking into those fights. So,
they completely honey-dicked us there big time. They were injuring you to make their art look better.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it's completely honey-dicked
us. All the time.
Just pulling it back down to Bellator, we have a couple of big shows coming up as well. One that I'm looking for is the original American Gangster is back. And he's taking on the Huntington Beach Bad Boy and Chael Sonnen versus Tito Ortiz. I can't wait to see Chael. It's like he was talking about getting tested outside, you know, all his build up to it and stuff. He's just, for Bellator, I don't think they could have got a better fighter to hype even other Bellator fighters as well. So just speak again. I'm sure you've involved with Chael since he's signed. Is this a fight? You can tell us your thoughts on the fight and stuff like that. But just around the two guys, Tito and Chael, just speak to us about the upcoming bout.
You know, it's funny. Chael gets it 100%. I mean, and it's one of those things where I've done commentary with the guy, and one of the things I was worried about is that he'd be doing commentary and be Chael P. Sonnen, the American gangster, the biggest arms with the most charm. And he doesn't really do that when you're, you know, doing commentary, when you're working or when you're out hanging out with a guy. He doesn't really do that. So he knows when to turn it on and off. Tito really gets upset. Mm. Yeah, I've known Tito for a long time. He was a guy I originally started training with 15 years ago. Mm. And it's real for him in a sense. Where, well, he'll trash talk or whatever, but it really does get under his skin. He really does get upset as an opponent at Chael's trash talk and stuff like that. So emotionally, they're coming from totally different places. Chael kind of sees it as a game and hyping the fight, and he just loves saying outlandish stuff. And Tito takes that stuff really to heart and really personally, which is, I think, why fighters – it seems like every time Tito gets in the cage, guys are trying to piss him off because they're trying to make him emotional. But he's used to fighting that way. So the one thing I will say is when I'm between them, when I'm in the Bellator cage and I'm going, Tito, what do you think? And then, Chael, what do you think? Tito is so much bigger. It's ridiculous how – you forget kind of how big Tito is as a light heavyweight. I mean, Chael spent most of his career at 185. Tito couldn't make 185 if you cut his arms off. Mm. You know, he couldn't do it. So physically, the disparity is huge. But, you know, Chael Sonnen, the technically better wrestler, successful at a higher level, actually pinned Tito when they were in college. And, you know, that's he's hoping that'll be the difference. Because I see this as kind of a turtle fight. Whoever gets on their back is in big trouble. They both have pretty good jiu-jitsu, but you don't want a guy like Chael or Tito on top of you.
That's what sometimes this tends to happen, isn't it? When two good wrestlers go against one, or they sort of nullify another, and it becomes a striking fight. Yeah. And again, like Chael, I think he was a great sign for Bellator as well. Obviously, with the free agency pool, Bellator seem to have the biggest fishing rod in the pond, and they're certainly catching a lot of guys, most notably recently Rory McDonald. But again, that's something that Bellator are doing as well. And for a long time, UFC monopolized the mixed martial arts world, but you can see now Bellator, you've won, you've Rising is coming up as well. You've different shows coming up, and that can only breed more competition and better for the fan as well. But for the casual fan, as we call them, you know, there's a lot of casual fans here, especially since Conor McGregor has rocketed to the success he has. So there's a lot of guys that would call MMA UFC. They call the sport UFC. So
it's all the time.
The time. So for you, if you had to pitch to these guys, if you had to convince them, tune in to watch Bellator. What's your pitch?
My pitch would be that in Bellator MMA, it's one of those things where there's a hunger in Bellator that's really unique to the promotion. There's a hunger to the guys in Bellator where they really feel that they are behind something new, that they're behind something big, that they're behind something that's going to go somewhere. And whenever you feel that, they want to be the guy. They know there's room in Bellator to be the guy. And to be the guy that the promotion gets behind. So those young, hungry guys in Bellator, guys like James Gallagher, they know they can be the Bellator guy. They can be the king in that division. And there's a hunger there that really makes these guys fight. And they fight with everything they got. And it's one of those things that makes the sport great is when you believe in yourself and you believe in what you're doing. And that happens in Bellator, man. That happens 100%.
Yeah, and people forget as well how good some of those fighters in Bellator are, especially at the lightweight and welterweight class. Benson Henderson dominated the UFC lightweight class for a long time. He came over and he got beaten by Korshkov, and then he lost to Chandler. Mm. And there's so many guys in those divisions who can compete in the UFC level. People just don't attribute that. But somebody who people are talking about a lot is Michael Venom Page. A fight that I'd love to see Michael fight would be Paul Daly. But a lot of people are saying that they're moving Page along a bit too slowly. But I think it's something that you said earlier on. You forget how young these fighters are, and you have to kind of bring them on slow enough to give them the kind of a stepping stone instead of throwing them in there with the biggest guys. How do you feel Michael Venom Page is doing in his career? Do you think maybe he's going a little bit slowly, or do you think that it's a perfect pace that they're moving him along?
I think he is going a little slowly. I agree with the fans on that one, because to me, Michael Venom Page, what Michael Venom Page does that Gallagher doesn't necessarily is Page loves to tell you how great he is. He loves to tell you how he's the star. I mean, he's got a great mouth. He's fantastic at that. And, you know, I'm the star. I'm this, this, and that. You can't go slowly with that kind of attitude. You can't say, bring me along slowly, but I'm the best and I'm this, this, and that. One negates the other. And he's at that point in his career in that, 8 to 15 fight range when you start taking on tough guys, when you start taking on big talent, when you start, really taking on the guys that have had belts, that have competed for belts, that are champions, former champions. He's at that stage in his career. And he has been taking on a little bit slowly. And I think his self-promotion, I think, is one of those things where, look, you can't have it both ways. If you keep saying you're the best and this is, you're the greatest thing, you should be fighting the greatest thing. You should be on that road. You should be up there with the best. And so that's one of those things where when you compare a guy like Gallagher and a guy like Page, not only is Gallagher younger, Gallagher isn't up there saying, I'm the best right now, and this, this, and that, and the sunglasses, and I don't know if you guys saw the clip where he's making fun of Ronda Rousey.
He's got his hands full with Travis Brown.
Yeah, you're asking for, at least the spotlight.
Mm.
You're asking for the best. You're asking for trouble, and which is great. I mean, everybody loves that in a fighter, but you got to go out there and take on the best to earn that kind of thing. So, yeah, I agree. He has been taking on a little bit slowly, and I think he's going to move up pretty quickly from this point on. So we'll see how it goes.
Speaking of the best, someone who many consider one of the greatest of all time, Fedor, is taking on Matt Mitrione on the 18th of February. The great Fedor, as many see it. And again, for me, this is a fight where I got to be honest. Like, I'm not going to make you say your things here or your picks or what you think, but my money's going on Matt Mitrione in this one. I just think he's athletic. I think the last fight with Fedor and Maldonado. And please get the Russian commentator to call it with you. It'd be the greatest thing ever. But yeah, my money's on Mitrione here with his athleticism. No doubt Fedor lands, he puts most to sleep, but this is a big get again for Bellator to have Fedor stepping back into that Bellator cage.
Yeah, well, the thing about Matt Mitrione that I tend to point out is, you're right, he's athletic, he's fast for this weight class, he's very light on his feet. His last two fights in Bellator, Ollie Thompson and Carl Sagan Monatapa, he got hit a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot, against guys that were basically brawlers. I mean, tough guys, but Sagan Monatapa, if he had sat up and landed a couple punches, that fight's over.
Mm.
I talked to John McCarthy, who was a referee, afterward. He goes, if he had just sat up and punched once or twice, I would have stopped the fight. He decided to grapple. Matt Mitrione was able to get out and then knocked him out. Carl Samantoff and Ollie Thompson were not technical, great, tricky, slick, difficult strikers, and they landed a lot of punches. And Fedor puts everything behind every punch. I've been watching Fedor fight from the beginning since he was in rings, and that dude, I don't think I've ever seen him throw a jab. He just slings big punches. That's what he does. So the great part of this fight is what you're talking about. Both guys at this point in their career are very, very hittable. And everybody forgets. I mean, when you talk about, the thrill in Manila, Ali Frazier, they were just slow enough to get hit. And that made a great fight. I mean, it was way better than their first fight because they were more hittable than they were when they were younger. And I think that's one of those things. People talk about Fedor, you know, he's past his prime, this, this, and that. And, yeah, that may be true, but the guy can still hit, and Matt Mitrione can hit, and both guys defensively are much more vulnerable than they were earlier in their career. So, yeah, I think I can't make a pick on a fight I'm calling, but I think the winner of this fight is going to be standing over his unconscious opponent. That's how this fight's going to
happen. And what about the Russian commentator? Can we organize that?
We can put him in a separate booth or something.
It was the greatest commentary job ever, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
I've never seen a commentator turn on a guy he's roaring on within seconds. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you got to call it how you see it. I mean, I had a fighter write me last week and go, "Hey, man, I just want to let you know that I really appreciated you being really fair in my fight, man. You were really even-handed." And this is a guy I know really well. I know his team really well. And that's one of those things you have to do. I mean, you may really like a guy personally. You may be a fan or whatever and know him for years and years because I've been in this game for a long time. But you got to call the fight how you see it. It's one of the hardest things to do is kind of stay neutral in these fights. It's tough.
Just quickly before we move on, going back to Fedor, how many fights do you think he's going to have in Bellator? Do you think he'll stick around for so long? Because not long ago he was actually retired. So how many fights do you really see him having in Bellator?
That's the million-dollar question with every fighter I know. I mean, really. I mean, you know, when you talk about if I had said, "Hey, dude, I'm going to bet you $1 million when Ronda Rousey stood over Beth Correa that she would never win another fight again."
Crazy.
You would have said, you would have taken that bet.
Absolutely.
You would have taken.
Yeah.
I mean, you never. That's the problem with fighting is I see guys go from top of the heap. Anderson Silva hasn't beaten anybody since he beat Stephen Bonner. Now, when you looked at that fight, if I had said, "Hey, he'll never win a fight again," you would go, "Ah, you're crazy. No way." You never know, man. That's the hard thing about this sport is that, you know, in other sports, you know, American football, soccer, whatever you guys call football, whatever you guys want to say, you get a good couple years out of a guy when he's past his prime. You get a good – you never look back on one football game and go, "That was the turning point." They were never the same player after that. Usually you get a good year or so unless they have a dramatic injury or something. In MMA, I've seen fighters go from top of the hill to nowhere in one or two fights, depending on. So, yeah, it's an excellent question about Fedor, but it's a question you can ask about pretty much any fighter in the sport. You never know when that last one is.
Yeah, it could also be the opposite way. Who would have said Michael Bisping would be the UFC champion like 2 years ago? It's crazy.
Never.
Absolutely crazy.
Never. And there he goes. And but one thing is, he had dealt with adversity before. He had dealt with losing before. He had dealt with people overlooking him before. He had dealt with that his whole career. The problem with the Rousey situation is, having never dealt with it, how are you going to deal with it? And, you know, I think mentally in the last fight, he just wasn't there. I mean, it was deer in headlights, and you never know when that's going to happen.
2016 was a very tough year. It started with a gorilla, and it ended with Mike Goldberg leaving the UFC. From someone who sits in the commentary booth, Goldie was with the UFC for on 20 years. What's your thoughts with Goldie? Again, I'm not too sure if your relationship with Goldie or whatever like that, but just in regards to Goldie's, I suppose, what he's given to MMA, and I'm sure if you look at his last couple of follows on Twitter, he's not finished, but just with the UFC, remarkable to commentate for 20 years, and it's a little unfair, I felt, that he didn't get to say his goodbyes or have some sort of goodbye to the fans or the people he works with. But just speaking on Goldie.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys where Joe and Goldie, in a sense, you didn't know how the sport was going to sound before them. You weren't sure. I mean, I think, you know, before you had Jeff Blatnick, who I thought was a great commentator. But the way we think of the UFC sounding is Goldie and Joe. I mean, that's how we think of it when we hear it in our heads, and that's how we think of it. And that takes something special to do that. And Goldie was that special person for the UFC. I agree with you completely. I would like to have seen a send-off. I would like to see a chance to say goodbye to the fans, some little tribute for him. I understand they needed to move in a different direction, and that's the way it goes. But, yeah, the way it was done left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. I don't know Goldie personally. I've obviously spoken to Joe more than once, but Goldie I didn't know personally. But, yeah, the way it was sent off was, you know, the fans didn't really like that. But you have to say something about somebody who's been doing it 20 years and is the voice of the sport to so many people. Mm-hmm. That's a tough thing to change, and it's going to be an adjustment that it takes time to get used to, man, for sure.
Yeah, and another thing that's tough as well, people forget how big of that job actually is. It's not just showing up on the day and doing a little bit of commentary. There's so much in the whole week. You're doing the previews, you're doing the voiceovers, all that kind of thing. So it's going to be difficult to replace. Someone like Goldie, who done so much for the UFC, not just on the fight night.
The hardest thing, and we do opposite jobs. He's play-by-play, I'm color. Yeah. But the hardest thing about this job that people don't understand, or the thing I would like to change about this job is there's an idea that, oh, this person can talk. They can do color. Throw them in there. And you know from watching fights, there are guys that are god-awful. They're usually good talkers, but it's a job. It's a skill like any other job. You know how to drive a car doesn't mean I can throw you behind an 18-wheeler semi-truck and you can go across the country. That's a job. That's a skill you have to learn. It's not the same as driving a car to the supermarket. And people have this idea that good talkers make good broadcasters. And broadcasting is a skill. Somebody's talking in your ear. Somebody's doing this, and that. You're going to know when to talk and when to shut up. And a lot of people don't know that. And they look at the job and think it's easy. And, man, they get in there and it's more than they bargained for. It's one of those things where just being able to talk does not make you a great broadcaster. It's a skill you have to learn. It really is. You got to work at it.
100% as well. I'd agree. Like, as in, we always talk about, referees only have a split second to sort of call a fighter to do it. But again, the commentator has the exact same thing. They're watching. Fair enough, a lot of the shows would have monitors and stuff cage side that you'd view as well. But predominantly, you're calling the action as it happens. And 100%, it is an absolute skill set. There's one more thing I have to finish it with because I just thought it was funny. When we were backstage at Bellator in the Three Arena in Dublin, as we were in the media room, we were just standing outside and you were making your way out. Just that Bellator was about to start and you were making your way out to call it. And I'm sure this isn't the first time you've heard this, but somebody went, "Oh my God, is that Joe Rogan?" So you got the jiu-jitsu comparison and the color commentary comparison. How many times a day do you hear that, and does it drive you absolutely berserk?
At least 3 or 4 times a show. At least. the it's funny. As soon as he shaved his head, I remember going, "Oh, don't do this to me, Joe." Like, I was so. Because he didn't know he had hair for a long time. And as soon as he shaved his head, I was like, "Oh, motherfucker." I was so mad because, we do look similar. I'm not, I mean, what can you say? We look really similar. And we're built similar. But what's funny is the way we call fights is, I think, really, really different. Yeah, we have a really different background. His background is more traditional martial arts. I was a wrestler. He's a 10th Planet guy. I'm Carlson Gracie. So our jiu-jitsu style is really, really different. And I think we call fights really differently. But people like to just lump us together, compare us all the time. And like I said, I hear it constantly, but it's when people point out that we look similar, that's fine. It's when people have an idea that I somehow like practice to sound like Joe or some dumb shit or something, that it's my intention to sound like him, which I don't think I sound like him at all when it comes to calling fights. But yeah, it's the idea that I somehow, I don't know, changed my face to look like him or some dumb shit. Yeah, that's the thing that doesn't make any sense. It's like, what do people think I do that I would intentionally try to look like Joe is absolutely ridiculous. We just happen to look similar. What are you going to do about it?
Were you ever tempted just to take photos with people and say, "Oh, tag me at Joe Rogan"?
Yeah. Like Matt Damon.
I'm sure that might work.
Matt Damon and Mark Wahlberg.
If I ever get arrested, I'm just going to pretend to be Joe Rogan and nobody, see if that gets me out.
Most people wouldn't know because they don't really take too much attention to anybody anyway.
Well, look, listen, Joe, thanks for, Jimmy, we're going to let you go there as well now, so we appreciate the time that you've given us here. When you do come back to Dublin, let's have a beer and let's cheers it. An absolute pleasure to have you on, and it's great to listen to you. Keep up the great work, and we look forward to hearing your voice pretty soon with the car coming up. So again, thanks for stopping by, and you're more than welcome anytime, and obviously Voitalk.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you in Ireland, buddy.
Cool. Take care, man. Cheers. Take care. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The great Velvet Sound. Dan Mulvaney's in trouble. The Velvet Sound of Jimmy Smith from Bellator joining us there. Yeah. Obviously, Fight Talk quick fire news. The biggest news story of the week.
Oh, that is.
It has to be.
Big ones.
It has to be after weeks of this show having no rudeness, where people could listen to the show in the peace of mind, knowing that they didn't have to rush for the volume button. But that time has ended, people. We want to welcome back to Obviously Fight Talk, Big Daddy Crazy Carl Doran.
What's the crack, lad?
What's the crack?
Fuck off.
Where the fuck have you been?
Yeah, I was in camp. I was actually training Ronda Rousey on her striking. Didn't go too well.
It didn't go too well. So, yeah, Carl Doran's back, ladies and gentlemen. So, people on Twitter and Facebook, stop fucking annoying me. Here he is.
He's here.
He's back. So, welcome back. So, again, you can already tell you're only in and I've said fucking about three times.
I know, yeah. I have that aura about me, you know. It's just, it's like when you walk into a gay bar, you expect to smell anal. And that's what I smell like.
And he's back. So, Rob, as Carl would say, clock, Rob. Get the clock, Rob. Fuck the clock. Right, so... some of your quick fire news this week. Carl's back. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson posted a picture of a signed contract to face reigning welterweight champion Tyron Woodley at UFC 209, saying, quote, "Waiting on you, at T. Woodley." Follow that in a back and forth between the two. Woodley threatened to give the shot to Damian Maia, tweeting, "Obviously I punched you too hard in that fight. You're overly entitled and disillusional. Maybe I'll give it to Damian Maia." Carl,
yeah, I'll start with this one.
This is your man.
I think at this point you kind of have to have the rematch.
Oh,
yeah, I think you have to. Like, because there's a good story behind the fight. I apologize, by the way, if I start coughing, I'm not very well. But yeah, like, I think you have to have that fight. There's so much of a story behind it now, and there's so much shit going on social media that it'd be, you know, from a business aspect, it's kind of, it's a bit, you know, it's stupid, really, for the UFC not to capitalize on that story, really. I think there's just too much going on between them. The fight last time, it ended in a draw. We need to have the rematch. He was number one against the champion. You have to have it.
I think like 99 out of 100 draws should be a rematch. It's that one where maybe you don't need to do it, but a lot of them do, especially if it's a title fight.
Yeah.
And it was very close. I think some people thought it went the other way. I think I agreed with the decision, but I definitely think that's the fight to make. And unfortunately, I'm a big fan of Damian Maia, but he's not a huge star, so it's not like you're not doing the rematch because you have this big star coming in and you're gonna make tons of money. You're not. It's gonna probably make more money on doing the rematch anyway. Yeah. So for business reasons, I think it makes sense, and for sporting reasons, I think it makes sense as well.
For me, with this one, like, if Woodley is there's the talk of, oh yeah, I'll fight McGregor, I'll fight him in Crow Park. Then there's a video of him squaring off with Michael Bisping, going, yeah, let's do a catchweight bout. So, I don't know. I think Woodley is... he waited so long for his title shot and he sat inside.
He's looking for the money fights, but that doesn't make any sense to me, saying Damian Maia. Yeah. He does want the money fights. He was looking for GSP, as you said. He's looking for everybody. But Damian Maia... But that's not really a money fight, Damian Maia. Unfortunately for Damian Maia, because I'm a huge, huge fan of Damian Maia.
It's an MMA fan's fight.
Yeah, it's a great fight. It's an amazing fight, but it's just not. It's not a money fight.
The rematch has to happen.
It has to happen. Yeah, I don't think, you know, I think if he has a choice, he's going to go for the Wonderboy one anyway. I think that's just him.
But, like, with the greatest respect, when we talked about Woodley previously, we used to yawn and go, oh, yeah, Tyron Woodley's fight.
You used to yawn.
Yeah, of course they did. I'll be yawning now. But I think they can sell a rematch. Do you know what I mean? There's a little bit, you know, Wonderboy, you know. You know, we got rocked, he got hurt, they showed a weakness in Wonderboy's game, but he also had his moments in the fight as well. A draw, you don't see them that often, but
think of it as a FA Cup semi-final. If it's a draw, you always go to a replay. You have to have it.
I think that rule changed. You don't get a replay in the FA Cup.
Only Noel's allowed to make football analogies.
Look at that, look, bang. So yeah, oh no, stop now. All right, there we go. Something or somebody I never expected to talk about on this show, but Meryl Streep, while accepting a Golden Globe Award, said, "So Hollywood is crawling with outsiders and foreigners, and if you kick them all out, you'll have nothing to watch but football and mixed martial arts, which are not arts." The old age argument, I suppose, for all MMA fans and people involved in the sport: do we defend / educate, or do we just accept that people who do not follow the sport will have uneducated opinions, no matter how wrong or whatever they are? So what's your thoughts on El Merrill?
I think we should have a lynching.
Missed you, man.
No, to be fair, like, she's obviously entitled to have her opinion. That's fine. I just don't think broadcasting her an award ceremony is...
Well, it was... Yeah, it was a more of a... I don't even think that she was saying anything really that bad about MMA. I think she was just... I think maybe there was a little bit of the Dana White spoke for Donald Trump, so she's talking about MMA. Maybe there was some of that. But I think it's more of, you know, we're actors, we're the arts, and sports are the arts. I think that's all it was, honestly.
Now, I'll be honest, Meryl Streep's the biggest fucking terrorist gone. When they fucking shot Mamma Mia, Jesus Christ, that's a catastrophe. Like, I don't know. I really don't care. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, all she's doing right there at the Golden Globes is she's like, oh, this is filled with liberals. I have to say something liberal. But that's all that was.
Yeah, it was also misguided because she was talking about how, you know, you'd only have that because there's no immigrants. But, like, there's so many different nationalities that fight in MMA. Probably one of the most diverse sports in the world.
Well, I was on Facebook earlier today and the UFC put up a picture of Joanna Woodley Connor, and two other champions, and they're all from different continents,
exactly,
different countries,
yeah.
And they were saying, clearly,
a multi-country. Amanda Nunes would have been them as well. But the thing is, art is perception, is what you perceive to be art. That was fancy. Scott Coker sent her an open letter saying, yeah, whatever, come to Bellator, you'll see what it really is. Look, Pete Carroll said it in a tweet, and Pete nailed it. He turned around and he said, look, listen, a couple of years ago, we would have found that the mouth of someone of such a big caliber as Meryl Streep spoke of MMA. The fact that she even called it mixed martial arts is quality.
Yeah, well done.
So 10 out of 10 there, Meryl. But, like, again, it's nothing. We always have this. You know, we had it during the week with the sports minister saying it's barbaric and savage. Fuck off.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? If you don't like it, change the channel. Or if you don't, you're not educated about it, don't have an opinion on it.
Lynching.
Yeah, deal. Hold on.
One job now. I've seen exactly what you're doing there.
Yeah, I paused.
You paused it and you waited for it to go. And you're like, oh shit, I paused that. Amazing.
Whatever, pal. Jimmy Rivera versus Marlon Vera is off this weekend, the UFC's Fight Night 103 card. Rivera was originally booked to fight top contender Brian Caraway, who was then replaced by Vera due to injury. In a final twist, Rivera has pulled himself from the card, stating he does not feel the matchup is fair. To quote, Ali asked, if it's going to be the replacement, give me someone who's going to benefit me. Rivera told MMAfighting.com, if I fight Vera, it makes me look like a bully, and I teach my kids not to be a bully. Plus, he's got a daughter that he's trying to make money to get her surgery done. I got a heart, man. I can't stand there and stop that. So this is a sort of a weird twist of fate, you know. A fighter gets, you know, obviously Caraway got injured, and it sucks when a card suffers like that. Originally, he accepted the fight. You got a bit of time to think about, like, the next day, and then he was like, shit, man, I can't do this. So what's your thoughts on this one? Like, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, you said, like, it sucks when a card suffers like that. I think the card suffered when they put Brian Caraway on it, but that's a different story.
What is it with you and Brian Caraway?
I can't stand little cunt. Simple as.
So for you, they're a family of...
Yeah, they're just a family of cunty cuntness. There you go.
He's back.
I'm back. But
he really loves Misha Tate. Like, he's a big fan.
Misha Tate fan.
Not really. I don't know. Like, Rivera, I have a lot of respect for Rivera. I'm a big fan of him.
Mm.
But I could see exactly why he pulled out a fight. Taking this fight, it's a bit of a risk. Like, he's not going to come out and say, well, if I lose, I lose to Vera. Like, you know what I mean? He's not going to say that. And the way he put it, it was like a politician's answer.
Yeah, it is.
It was very like, this isn't going to lose me any fans, but it's not going to gain me any fans type thing. It was a political answer. He done a good job. Whoever's PR team, well done. Big thumbs up.
Yeah, at first when I seen this, like, I just thought of, you know, it's not a great fight for him. He's not somebody ranked. If he loses, the bad one. But then when he brings up the whole thing of surgery, it's a very, very strange one, I think. I'm not sure if that... I'm sure that's sincere. I don't have any reasons to doubt that that's sincere. Yeah. So... maybe he's just a very nice guy and he's like, I can't really fight him. He genuinely thinks he's so much better that he's going to beat him easily. Mm. You know, I've no reason to say he's not thinking that, but it is a very difficult fight for him because he doesn't really gain much if he wins it. Especially coming off of that win over Faber.
He just gets his purse and that's really it. It doesn't advance him.
But again, a purse is great.
Yeah.
I have a lovely brown one. You have a almost look at your faggoty book. It's a weird one. I've never seen it. So interesting. And there, look. Got that one right, Rob.
Well done.
Eat shit. Khabib appeared on MMA Air with Ariel Helwani. And he basically, Khabib Nurmagomedov was quoted as saying, we'll fight for the bullshit belt. Beat Ferguson and then beat Conor for the real belt. Did we all watch MMAR?
No.
No, yeah. Rob did, yeah, perfect. Well, I'll have a conversation with Rob. It's just like being the last few weeks, you sneak off. so I was hugely impressed with Khabib. And me and you were talking about this earlier as well, so I'm going to stay with you, say, because I think it's great. He's got a real personality that the UFC could really sell. Yeah. Like, he does. Like, he's... The broken English, Brendan Schaub talked about it and all. Joe Rogan question, was that really him tweeting it or something? He's like, of course it is, the broken English. But like, the way he even squared off with Ariel Helwani going, I'll fight you. I give you 200,000.
Did he give you 100?
Are you 100,000? That's 300,000. That's not bad. But it's just, he was quality on it. Like, amazing. His personality showing across. And like, let's not play games. Like, the man is an absolute beast. Like,
He's a killer.
Yeah, one of the things he kept saying was that I'm the realest talker in the division, or in the UFC in general. And after that interview, you kind of have to believe him. Like, the stuff that he was saying, you were like, that's true.
But I loved where he was talking about, Ariel was asking him, so, you know, you were talking to Dana, and he's like, yes, I was saying I'm going to beat your boy. And he's like, finish this fight. This fight is done. Yeah. And he's there saying to Michael, you have to quit or I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah, I know. Jesus. Yeah, and he was talking about how when he got the submission, he didn't pull out because he's like, well, I'm not going to break his arm.
Yeah.
He just had to tap.
Yeah.
But,
he said he got real gentle with it and made you like as gentle as you can be while I'm with him.
But it's, I think he could be a huge star. I really do. And apparently he's huge in Russia. Yeah. I don't know.
They're saying he's bigger than Fedor.
Yeah, apparently he's huge in Russia. So market that. But
why wouldn't he be huge in Russia? Like, you know, if you want to go stereotype, Russian men are supposed to be fucking big gnarly bastards. And the gnarliest bastard in that division is Khabib,
the man that wrestles bears.
Ferguson has come out as well now and said, you know what, did they fucking tie meat to you so the animals will play with you or something, you know what I mean? They're a bit of back and forth. He said he's a terrible boxer and, you know what I mean, all this sort of stuff. So look, no one questioned that, and Michael Johnson landed a shot on him, and now everyone's going, oh, Khabib's a terrible striker.
But I love this, though. I have to say, before we do move on, I do love Khabib's attitude now, especially after that post fight interview in his last fight as well.
What was his attitude?
It's gone. This one's not wrote down, so I'm ad-libbing here. Raquel Pennington spoke about that she was brought into the Ronda Rousey camp along with Carl Doran. But she signed a waiver to basically a hush-hush waiver. She said now she's gone up there before to train as well previously. And she said, she didn't really comment on it, but she said, it was a very good training session and it was productive. So, judging by the 48 seconds of that, how do we, Raquel Pennington, number 5 in that weight class, is that in a way a sign that maybe Ronda, this was one and done, the fact that she's willing to bring somebody in who's in the top 5, so let's be honest, realistically, an opponent in the next, if she was to beat a man that potentially Raquel Pennington is one, maybe 2 fights away from fighting Ronda?
I don't know, maybe you could read into that way, but like, there's not that many girls at that weight class, that size, and someone who could probably emulate Nunes, so I don't really read into that much.
Was Raquel on Ronda's team on Tough?
I think she was. Aces? I'm not sure which
one. It might be that they were familiar with each other.
She was definitely on Tough on that season, so I'm not sure.
In MMA, right, they're not in the same they're not in the same camp, they're not in the same team. So essentially, if you're a top 5 and Ronda's coming in fighting for the belt, realistically, Pennington, after, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think the camps are kind of weird now. There's only a certain amount of fighters who are staying in the one camp. Everyone's kind of moving around and training with different people. So I'm not sure if that's a definite, but you know, it could be. But I wouldn't say 100%. Yeah, that's a reason why she won't come back. But I'm not sure.
It's all speculation, obviously.
It's complete speculation.
Well, you don't really know ultimately. Like I would imagine she won't be back for a long time.
Yeah.
No way of knowing.
Long time or never. For me, I can't really see her coming back, but who knows?
Yeah, well, it's... We always say this. MMA fans are fucking fickle. If Ronda Rousey was to come back and win by armbar in the first round against somebody else, all of a sudden it's Ronda bus is back up, the wheels are inflated, and we're on the fucking road again. We're on the road again! I love when I get into this one. But that's exactly what happens, you know what I mean? But realistically, who do you put Ronda in there against now? You know what I mean? As in, somebody spoke about this. If she's getting a purse of $3 million, you're not going to put her opening a pay-per-view. Do you know what I mean? She's got to be in the main event for that money.
Yeah, 100%.
A fight that Rob told me not to talk about, but fucking I'm talking about it because I like the fight, is Alistair Overeem against Mark Hunt.
Just a bit old news.
A little bit of old news, but fuck it. So we'll catch Carl up. Carl has been a sneak-off, so Carl can catch up with us. Confirmed for 209. Big fight, big heavy hitters. Just what's your thoughts on it?
I think it's a great fight, but did you see what Mark Hunt was talking about? And that he felt like he was like basically cornered into taking that fight against Alistair.
Was it a thing where he said like he has to take a defeat his family or something like that?
Something like that. I'm not entirely sure.
I think he said that, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not too sure what's going on behind the scenes, but since that Brock Lesnar fight, Mark Hunt has been fucking ruffled. Like, you know what I mean? He seems.
But in fairness, he's had a lot of opponents that have pissed hot after the fight.
Yeah. So he's rightfully angry. Like, yeah. I completely agree. And now he's going up against a fighter who has had his problems with fucking, you know, performance enhancing drugs. Like, so I could see like how he's saying like, look, I have to take this fight because I have to feed my family. But yeah, I don't know. As for the actual fight itself, it has potential to be a great fight, and to be honest with you, I don't know if Alistair would be able to knock out Mark Hunt, but I definitely see Mark Hunt knocking out Alistair. Alistair's chin, unfortunately, it's just not the way it used to be, and he tried to get to be that fighter that was light on his feet or whatever, but a heavyweight, you still get caught.
You would have commented, was it on Instagram? You were back and forth with a guy about this fight, and he was sort of saying, it's not a fight for me. He doesn't like watching Mark Hunt. So, which, you know, everyone has their opinion. Like, and he was sort of saying, you know, it's either when you watch a Mark Hunt fight, it's will he land a big shot or will he get taken down and get beaten up? And in a way, like, I know what that comment and listener, obviously, to the show, if he's talking about it, was saying. So, you know, I appreciate that. In some ways, I get his point. Now, I know you were commenting back saying, oh, no, I like, but in a way, it is. It's almost like when you see Mark Hunt fight, and this isn't disrespectful, it's almost like going back a few years in MMA.
Yeah, it's a bit of a throwback, but Mark Hunt has really improved his grappling.
Yeah.
Like, you see against Junior Dos Santos when they fought in their first fight. Have they fought twice? I think that was a rematch there. Maybe not. Well, the fight where he got head kicked, Dos Santos tried to take him down. He couldn't take him down, and he beat him on the feet. So it's not necessarily that. And he can be finished by strikes later in his career now.
Yeah.
Love Mark Hunt.
Yeah, you're a big Mark Hunt fan, in fairness to you.
Big cunt as well.
This is a lovely time while we're here to, if you enjoy what you're listening to, hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook at Obviously Fight Talk, on Twitter at @talk_fight. This message was brought to you by me. So look, we're going to hit up Daniel Mulvihedy now in a couple of minutes. So you're going to hear the again. So we're going to hit up Dan, so we'll be back to you in a minute. So, nice one, sound. Taking place this weekend, we have UFC Fight Night 103. It's the return of the prodigy, DJ Penn, taking on Yair Rodriguez. So we're going to do a little different here. We're not just going to talk it through. I think he's going to win because he's better wrestling. We're going to just sort of talk about the fight, you know, what's happening in regards to stories and stuff like that. So we're all very familiar with BJ Penn. Maybe some of the younger listeners may not be, but BJ Penn is an absolute legend of this sport. Ruled the lightweight division for a long time. An absolute beast. Retired. This is his second comeback from a tournament. Am I right in saying that?
Yes.
And he's taking on, excuse the pun, but a young prodigy in Yair Rodriguez. A lot of people, he was due to come back and fight Dennis Seaver first, wasn't it?
Seaver, yeah.
And now he's against Yair Rodriguez, and some people are sort of saying, ooh, Jesus, you know. Dana White talked for a long time that he wanted to see BJ retire and go out and not stay in the game, but for me, BJ Penn is a sort of a guy that he's always the fighter. He's not the guy who's sitting at home, and if he's capable and he feels he can do it and he feels he can compete, he'll want to compete. But just talk to us, lads, through what you think of this fight. Is this giving Rodriguez the key to the gate and BJ Penn standing at the gate saying they're not getting in?
They haven't given him an easy fight, that's for sure. Like you said, from Dennis Seaver to Yair Rodriguez. I don't know. Is this a one-off fight, or is he actually contracted to fight?
I'm sure he's contracted. The UFC never do one-off fights. Unless it's like, I think CM Punk was once off, but I still think he signed the contract.
No, he's still, BJ, CM Punk is still on the contract.
Yeah, it's usually three fights minimum.
Yeah, so it'd be his existing contract that he was on. So he was in retirement, he signed the contract, went into retirement, coming back out, he's still fulfilling that contract. So whatever he had left on his contract, is, I'd imagine that's how many fights he has left if he wants to do it, you know? Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how BJ does turn up. I mean, I don't know if he's still Jackson's MMA. But you got to think, he's coming back from a three-fight loss. You know,
and he hasn't won a fight since
2010.
And he's also
2011.
He's not just lost them fights, yeah. He's got beat up in them fights, yeah, as well.
Yeah, oh, sorry, yeah, Dan, you're actually 2010 was his last win, and yeah, that was against Matt Hughes all them years ago.
Jesus, yeah, Christ.
But when you look, I think that was his comeback fight, was it not?
No, he fought. He lost to Frankie Edgar
you know, talk of him retiring at that point. Came back, beat Matt Hughes, knocked him out, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was a good performance.
But again, like you say, Frankie Edgar, he's fought him three times.
Yeah.
He's lost all three times.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe it is a. I mean, I can understand why they, why, you know, obviously when they had the Hawaii show on, and obviously they had to cancel it because of him. You know, it would have been a good thing to put on, but coming off three losses, I don't know. I just hope I can't see him being the same prodigy. But if he does it, it'll be a shock to me. That's for sure. If he wins. And then he does against the caliber or a lot of fighters fighting Yao. It'll be very interesting to see.
Spanner in the work here for it, right? We're all looking, obviously, BJ coming back. Is this more of a dangerous fight for Yair Rodriguez?
Very dangerous.
Like, Yair Rodriguez.
It is a name, though.
Yeah, but he's seen as this. You haven't shut up about him. And that's the majority as well of the MMA world as well, talking about Yair Rodriguez. But BJ, right, we're all saying he's lost three in a row, but when you look at he's fought the who's who in these fights as well. But Yair Rodriguez, I think, has a lot more to lose here than BJ Penn. If BJ Penn goes out and gets beaten, it's like, you know, it's like Rocky coming back and fighting the young studs, you know what I mean? It's gone, well, you know, didn't he do well, and wasn't it great to see BJ come back? But if he beats Yair Rodriguez, this could be a bad, bad fight for Yair Rodriguez.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially when you look at his record, it's definitely a very tough fight for Rodriguez, even though it's a big name.
It doesn't stop his career, it just slows it down.
It does, yeah. That's it's not on the level of, like, say, when Ryan Bader lost to Tito. It's not on that level. I think BJ is still kind of put on a bit of a pedestal in the MMA world, so I think still he's looked at as, if he shows up, as Dan said, if he shows up as the BJ Penn, he can win this fight. Now, the question that I have is, has MMA moved on so much that even if the best BJ Penn, if you took BJ Penn from, say, when his heyday, probably what, 2006, 2007?
Thereabouts.
Probably around there. If you took him and his skills and his physical ability, everything from then into now, does he even beat Yair Rodriguez? I don't know. I don't know if the MMA game has developed so much that even that BJ Penn can beat Yair Rodriguez. And that's not me saying Yair Rodriguez is the best fighter in the world. That's me saying, has MMA moved on too much? You've seen it with all these guys. He's been around for so long, people forget how long he's been around.
Yeah.
Like, if you pick somebody from that time who's not like a BJ Penn, if you pick any other guy from that time, most of them, you're not going to pick them to win because the skills just weren't there. Yeah. Now, BJ Penn was that good. He was an amazing fighter, one of the best fighters in the world at the time. But I don't know. I don't know if that BJ Penn even beats Yair Rodriguez at this point.
And that's the problem. We'll never know the answer to that question.
Yes, of course.
Short of someone building a time machine, you know what I mean? So it is a true question of, on the night, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Will Yair show up? I highly doubt he's going to underestimate BJ Penn.
I don't think
And I highly doubt BJ Penn's so going to underestimate Yair Rodriguez. So it just turns out to, who's the universe going to side with on that night? Will there be a punch that just connects in a movement? Will there be, you know, that freak submission? You know, and also, that will there be a fighter that fully manages to implement our game and just takes that fight by the scruff of the neck and wins it? We don't know.
I think one of the interesting things about this is that Yair Rodriguez, we've seen him in his fight, he's so flashy and he does so many amazing things, but usually the fighter who beats that style of fighter is the person with really good fundamentals who can just, you know, drag him into their game of a basic boxing game or a basic grappling game. And maybe BJ Penn can do that. Who knows? BJ Penn has some of the best fundamentals in the game. But I think that Yair Rodriguez will just have, I think just the MMA game has moved on too much. And I really do see this being a really bad beating for BJ Penn, unfortunately. I really do.
Sorry, I'm a bit dying to get in. Thanks very much, Dan.
I could see.
Thing I'd say is, right, BJ Penn looked, and this is no disrespect to BJ Penn, he looked slow against Frankie Edgar.
Yeah.
Almost 7 years ago.
Yep.
So BJ Penn has not sped up in that time frame. There's no way he's got faster. The only thing would be slower.
Yeah.
So you're not going to lose that, and it's not like you can go away for a while and regenerate. We're not playing a video game here. So, like, don't get me wrong, Frankie Edgar is like a Tasmanian devil on cocaine. You know what I mean? It's very different to compare speed in that sense. But you're talking, for me, looking at this, you're talking BJ looked slow, let's say 6.5 years ago. BJ looked slow 6.5 years ago. Now, granted, he came out and he beat Matt Hughes in 21 seconds. Topology's open in front of me here. I don't have all these stats, right? But
you should have went with him.
Yeah, but no, you look at that. He then lost, in credit to him, Nick Diaz. He went 3 rounds, unanimous decision. But he was beaten welterweight. Now, that was a welterweight. He lost to Roy McDonald, Frankie Edgar again. So there's no way he's improved his speed. I know what you're saying, fundamentals. Yeah, Rodriguez is not going to stand in front of BJ Penn.
No.
BJ Penn, when he was in his heyday, he was ahead of the curve. Yeah. For me, BJ was ahead of the curve.
100%.
He had the jiu-jitsu. This is something we spoke about previously
defined an MMA fighter at that time.
Yeah. Exactly.
100%.
But he had this. It was like we were talking about Dillashaw's wrestling last week. We were saying Dillashaw's wrestling is so good that he could leave his wrestling alone and work on his striking. And that's what BJ could do. Like, dare take BJ down. Like, you could grab a leg. You could be working a takedown at BJ Penn and he'll hop and look at you while clattering the head off you. Right, and that was BJ. That was what BJ could do. He could do what people didn't think could be done. Then all of a sudden, these new breed of mixed martial artists come along. Now you look at the new breed guys, like we always used to say, Rory McDonald's a new breed. He's training MMA. Rory McDonald's a new breed. This breed. Yair Rodriguez, BJ Penn has never stood. And like, Yair Rodriguez is only a prospect, really. Yeah. But for me, at this stage, BJ Penn has never stood across the octagon from a Yair Rodriguez. That type of mixed martial artist.
Different.
Yes. With the caliber of guys BJ's fought. He has fought the who's who, but he hasn't fought this type of complete fighter.
Yeah.
Speed, whatever. So I'm fearful for BJ. Watch, he'll probably win by flying triangle or something. Yeah, but it's a fearful fight. I would have preferred to see him against Dennis Seaver. No disrespect to Dennis Seaver. It's just a bigger mismatch. We talked about Rivera refusing to fight Vera because he felt to be a bully. Yair Rodriguez, for me, he's not going to stand in front of BJ Penn, and it's going to be a sore, hard night, and it's going to be hard to watch, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Anything that works, I mean, for me, like you said, BJ Penn is a tough guy. As we know from, he's been, you know, in a lot of 5-rounders, a lot of 3-rounders. He takes it to the decision. He grinds it out, win or lose. So that could be a factor to think of as well. I know Yaro's last fight, he went 5 rounds. But again, like we said, man, depends what BJ comes, depends what he's changed. He might just be a new man. Yeah. I remember Diego Sanchez, I don't know who's been interviewed by, he was saying, you know, they were training together. But then again, when he trains with Diego Sanchez, you're thinking, is BJ going to come out and try to stand and bang? And I hope he doesn't. I hope he stands and bangs, looks for the takedown and finish him off on the ground. Get that rear naked choke in and lick the blood off your gloves, and that's it.
You also said as well that BJ was good at grinding out the wins, and that his cardio was one of his best aspects of his game. I believe the reason the last time BJ's fight didn't go through is because he was using IVs.
Yeah.
And now he doesn't have that IV. How is he going to adapt to the weight cut and refueling? And will the cardio be there if that's the game plan?
And the crazy thing to think of is physically, BJ Penn was never the most athletic fighter. Mm-mm. But physically, he's fighting at the lowest weight class possible for him, probably. I don't think he can make 135. And he's probably still going to be the smaller guy in there. I think Yair Rodriguez is going to be a bigger, more athletic, stronger fighter in there.
One thing I'll say, he's fighting out of Jackson Wink now as well. Talk about a gym to rejuvenate a career.
Yeah.
39-year-old BJ. I'm just worried.
Yeah. I'm worried too. Go ahead, Dan.
No, but I was going to say, you know, we were earlier, you were saying, that, you know, times have changed, the fighters have changed, and Cole just brought up a good point. Also, the way things are done changed. Like, you know, back when he used to fight, you could do IV or you could do different things that weren't banned and different way of getting, you know, getting the best that you could be. Whereas now they've taken them things away from you. He's got to adjust, not only adjust to his training, to the new breed of way of training, the new fighters that are put in front of him. Also, the way he has to cut weight or whatever it is that help him progress, that's all changed as well. So that's, you know, more than one factor for him to consider.
Yeah, and I think we have to think about what we spoke about with Robin Black. He spoke about how the sport moves on so quickly that I even think you have to look at, and he'd probably call me crazy even saying this.
But crazy!
You have to look at the likes of a John Jones who's been out for 2 years. And when he comes back, these guys have been fighting each other. They've been getting better. They've been getting better. They've been getting better. He was so much, so better than everybody. But I really don't think it's going to be that big of a difference when John Jones comes back, because he hasn't been in the cage. Mm. I think when he comes back, people are going to be surprised. Everyone was surprised when he went in there and OSP lasted three rounds with him. Five rounds? It was an interim title fight,
Yeah.
So I think people are going to be surprised. And I think it's a similar thing with BJ Penn. People forget how quick this sport has moved on. I think fighters of that generation, I think if GSP comes back, it's going to be difficult for him to fight any welterweight. I think a lot of welterweights, probably wrong. no, I think it's very difficult for somebody back
GSP's
in that area.
Dick in your mouth,
it's difficult, man.
I'd go right down to the balls.
Your co-main event is an intriguing one as well. You've Joe Lauzon taking on Martin Held.
Great fight.
Joe Lauzon, just give him the fight of night bonus now. Lauzon, coming off a defeat to Jim Miller in what we classified as probably one of the fights of the year a couple of weeks ago. And Martin Held coming off a defeat to Diego Sanchez. So this is, Martin Held is known as the BJJ guy. Lauzon's not too rusty on the ground either. But again, this is the classic, they're going to stand and trade. But again, I think I love Joe Lauzon. Big, huge Joe Lauzon fan. Always have been. Love the guy. Every time he comes to fight, he wears the heart in the sleeve. Martin Held needs a win here, though. And he needs a win big time. So what's your thoughts on this comment?
I wouldn't be surprised if it turns into, who was it back in the day? Was it Carlos Newton and Sakuraba?
I wouldn't be surprised
if it was just a gentleman's agreement, just a grapple.
Yeah.
Because you know Joe Lauzon on his game. Yeah. And so was Martin Held. So it could be that sort of, I'd love to see that fight. You know, where they're just like, you know what, fuck this, there won't be too many strikes, we'll just go for it.
But you gotta give Lauzon, Lauzon has been in a lot of brawls and stuff, but he's won a lot of them brawls as well. So you gotta figure, as much as, like, what way do you play this? You're saying a gentleman's agreement. Do you play, let's you know, hit iron against iron and see which one is stronger? Or do you say, right, his ground game, our ground game, you know, we can compete? Or I have the advantage on the feed here. So what way do you know what I mean? What's your thought process going into it, you know?
Yeah, it really does depend. Like, and I don't think Joe Lauzon is in, you know, any urgent need of, like, you know, oh, he needs to get a win, he's going to be cut. Joe Lauzon will never be cut. He'll never be cut. So he could literally just go in and he can afford to say, let's have that gentleman's agreement. Because either way, if this is the jiu-jitsu clinic that I expect it to be, that could be fight of the night.
Yeah. Or it could turn into a boxing fight. Martin Held against Diego Sanchez in his last fight, done really well on the feet, and once he actually got to the ground, even though he's a superstar grappler, once he got to the ground, Diego Sanchez has done a really good job of controlling him. So I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Lauzon tries to take the similar route. It seems like Joe Lauzon and Diego Sanchez are kind of just, they're always around each other, like they're fighting each other, or else they're fighting people who they fought. So it's an interesting one. But if it goes to the ground, it could be really, really interesting. I don't know who I'd pick on the ground, but I think just overall, based on the last fight, based on the Diego Sanchez fight, I think Joe Lauzon can get this done. But if it goes to the ground, and similar to what you said, where they just try grapple each other,
that's jizz worthy to watch.
It is.
Joe Lauzon, man, he's a veteran. I think Cole, you might be right. I hope they do have a gentleman's agreement of a good grappling match, and it could happen. Who knows? But I personally think, if I was to pick anyone, again, I'll go with Joe. Yeah. I think he's rear naked choke or an ankle lock. That's that. He's tough. I love how he fights. He grinds out. But again, Rob, like you said, if it's a stand-up fight, we've seen how tough he is. But at the same time, he can be a bit chinny as well. He gets caught and he can put on his ass. But he's a veteran. He's been in there. Forest fight of the night. I don't know, man. I need to look at the rest of the card.
Yeah. I have to point out how much of a professional Daniel Mulvihedy is, because Carl goes, that's jizz wordy, and then Dan just goes straight into his little pick.
That's why he's on the show, man.
Yeah.
He's just so solid. look, there's a couple of notable fights there as well. You've got Court McGee taking on Ben Saunders as well. Yeah. Pretty decent fight.
I didn't realise Ben Saunders was back.
Killer B is back. The man of the omoplata. It's a decent fight card. Again, we always sort of talk about this as well, you know, just because it mightn't be the biggest names or guys you don't know, it's always worked. It's almost like what we were talking with Jimmy Smith earlier, is look, listen, these guys are they're hungry. Like we were saying, Dan, to Jimmy Smith about, you know, if you were talking to casual fans that are, you know, called MMA UFC, you know, what would you say to sell Bellator? And he basically said, look, Bellator are the guys that are hungry, you know, they want to come to Bellator and beat a star and beat it. And this is almost like what the undercard and this type of card, fight nights are. These are the guys who are, most recently, obviously BJ and Lozon are there a long time, but a lot of these guys are the up and up guys that you might know, or they're the name that's a big enough name, not for a pay-per-view, but to sell a fight night. And check them out, man, because never know. These are the guys that could be household names.
Yeah, I know we're in a bit of a rush for time, but before we end it, that main event of the prelim card, holy moly. John Moraga versus Sergio Pettis. That is a phenomenal fight. That is an amazing fight. That's if we're going to do under the radar, that'd be mine, 100%.
And this is what UFC do, don't they? Like, they put a fight card like this, which is quite worthy of even a pay-per-view show. Yeah. I would easily pay for that top half as a pay-per-view card. But like you said, by the undercard, I'll be absolutely honest with you, I don't recognise any of the names down there that further down. That's me personally.
Frankie Sands.
Frankie Sands.
Yeah, this is a good fighter. That could be a very, that could be an exciting
decent card. Good night of fights, and I'm guessing free on Fight Pass.
Yeah, it'd be free on Fight Pass. It'll be on the Dodgy Box as well. Yeah.
I think we should make an announcement for next week's guest.
Well, who's next week's guest, Rob?
Who's next week's guest?
Who's next week's guest?
Yeah.
Who's next week's guest?
Next week's guest.
Who's next week's guest?
Professor.
Who?
The Fight Professor.
Who's the Fight Professor?
The Fight Professor.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, from Pride.
Steven! We've a pretty badass guest, and we could have another one. You don't know because we can't confirm because we're not recording, but this is always a great time to do. We'd like to thank Dangham Overheady as always for joining us. Carl Doran, welcome back.
Yeah, I won't be here next week.
Don't call this a comeback. He's gone deep back into camp with Ronda. They're sorting that shit out. Him and Edmund get working on the footwork, Carl.
Tweezing
the
eyebrows.
Who wore it better, Ronda or the kangaroo? Did you see that, man?
Yeah.
Terrible, man. We're joined by a new hashtag, Dan. One Job Rob. Hashtag One Job Rob. Robert Palin. For myself, Nullig O'Keefe, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. We'd like to thank Paul Berdew Craig for coming on. We'd like to thank Jimmy Smith. Hit like, subscribe, do all the things. Obviously, Fight Talk Facebook. Twitter is @talk_fight. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Big shout out to Fight Store Ireland, Fighter's Choice, and MMAMix.com. Rob wants to say something.
And if you have any questions for Stephen Quadros, put them in the comments, because we're going to try ask him a few.
Yeah, we're going to hit it up. Questions. We're going to hit it up on Reddit as well. Stephen Quatro's on next week. If you don't know who Stephen Quatro's is, you do know him. You've heard his voice numerous times. He's your play-by-play guy.
The fight professor.
So, you know this guy upside down, inside out. You mightn't just realise it, but back in the day in the Super Pride as well. Look, I look forward to gentlemen. It's been a pleasure. Carl, welcome back.
Thanks.
Apologies for the bad language. Yeah, whatever.
Gets like that.
So, this is 49. Peace! Ooh.